All right, everybody, how the hell y'all doing out there in podcast land? Y'all hitting some of them drums? Got a fun guest today in James May of sludgy stoner punk trio, now quartet technically, Black Tusk from Savannah, Georgia. I was able to catch up with James out on their tour with both Whores, fellow Georginians. Is that George, people from Georgia, Georginians? And with White Nails as well. And we got to talk about all kinds of good stuff, like to-go cups and public drinking and blacking out before shows and trying to maintain some semblance of sanity while on the road. Be on the lookout for the new Black Tusk record, which I like to call Taking Care of Black Tusk. Out everywhere you can find music as of August 17th, 2018. So it's just been a week. It's hot off the presses. Black Tusk also has about a week left on this tour with Whores and White Nails, and they'll be picking up back up on October 31st, down in New Orleans, actually, for the Metal Alliance tour, and they will be on that tour for the month of November. So be on the lookout for them. Shout out to my sponsor, New Orleans Record Press. If you, your band, or whatever project you're looking for is thinking about putting out vinyl, go on over to NewOrleansRecordPress.com for color, design, and mastering options, as well as real-time quotes. Give them a holler. And tell them Jody Smith and the Crash Bang Boom podcast sent you. You know vinyl sounds killer. It just sounds better. You know it does. So print that shit. So without further ado, here we go, y'all. James May, Black Tusk, Crash Bang Boom.
Crowds go mad with joy.
All right, James May of Black Tusk, what's happening, dude? How you making out?
I'm good, man. About 3 weeks into the tour, got about a week left, and then be home a few months, and then off to the Metal Alliance tour.
Nice. What's up with the Metal Alliance tour? Oh, well, before we even go there, I guess this tour that we're talking about now, y'all are out here with Whores. We're sitting here in Brooklyn right now on, and I actually don't know what waterway this is, but I think it's fairly toxic. I don't know if you'd want to go swimming in it.
But. Sounds like the Savannah River.
Yeah, exactly. But we're here in Brooklyn. Y'all playing with Whores and White Nails, is it?
Yep.
Nice. Yep. And this run thus far has been pretty good?
Yeah. No complaints. It's been good turnouts, energetic crowds. No complaints on that. Yeah.
Right on. Yep. Congrats on the new record, by the way. Can I just call it Taking Care of Black Tusk?
Yep. Yeah.
That's it? Taking care of Black Tusk every day.
Our bass player can't even get it right. He's TBCT. Right. I laugh at it every time he tries to do it.
Dyslexia can be tough on people, you know what I'm saying? But this run's been going pretty good. I'm looking forward to checking y'all out tonight, obviously. A couple of new things. Like I said, new record just came out, about a week and a half ago now?
Yeah.
You added a guitarist since recording it for you live.
We did. Chris Scary Adams.
Is he scary, or is it one of those, like, calling a fat guy slim? Like, it's an ironic thing.
I guess so. He's not very scary, you know? When I met him, I didn't expect to meet him I heard this guy named Scary. I actually met him through John Baisley.
Oh, really?
He knew him from way back, you know?
John Baisley of Baroness. Yep. Yes.
He, from when they were in Savannah.
Okay.
We would pal around all the time. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And John, correct me if I'm wrong, has done a few of your album covers, correct?
Yes. He, at this point, I think they said, but at some point he said, I've done more album covers for you guys than I have for my own band.
Y'all probably put them out a little bit quicker than I think Baroness might.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about this other tour that you were saying y'all going to, this is going to be Metal Alliance?
Metal Alliance. Goat Whore is doing the headlining.
Okay.
And it'll be Casualties, Direct Support, and we're right before the Casualties. And then there's I've four other bands that are on the package, I think.
Okay.
It's going to be a good one.
How long are y'all going to be on that run?
About five and a half weeks.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, in the interim, man, in between doing all these runs, what do you do with yourself when you get back to Savannah?
Go to the local watering hole and work. Yeah, over at a place called the Jinx. And if your band has played in Savannah, you know the Jinx, and okay. You probably know me.
Okay,
me. Yeah.
Right on. So you've been able to sustain yourself when not on tour?
Yeah. You know, things get stagnant after a while. This was the longest break. I mean, we played shows and we would go do like some festival fly-ins or whatever, but we didn't tour for, you know, because of obvious with the Athon things and getting the new band together. We didn't tour for like a year and a half, which is insane for us to sit at home that long.
But been road dogging it.
Yeah, we were like, there's really no point until we have a new album. So some people, because we toured so much, a lot of people didn't even know if this was a band anymore.
Right.
You know,
just
so
maybe assumed y'all had called it quits.
That was why the TCBT thing was like, we're just calling it that, you know, because that's what we had to take care of us, you know, take care of our shit, you know, like, you know, get us back together.
Yeah. Well, in addition to, I guess, adding this new guitarist, and you, like I said, you got the new record out, I really like the story about how this band started in the first place. Can you run that by me again? Because I think it's a pretty funny story.
Yeah, we were all living, Andrew and Athon lived with about six other people in this two-story house up the street, and I lived with a couple of roommates down the street, and literally within like 3 days, their old band broke up and my old band had broke up. So we basically just took the surviving members. I remember they knocked on my door and came to the door and they were like, hey, man, you want to start a band? You know, it's like, yeah. And it's like, let's like really do it, though. Like, if we're going to do this, let's be serious about it. You know, like no bullshit. Let's really do a band. And then it's like, well, let's just do it with three members, too. Less members, less problems.
Yeah.
You know,
like, I'm into it.
Yeah, we were like, so we just went for it. Like 2005, got three songs together. I think there was about six, but the other three didn't make it.
Right.
Yeah. And
three made the cut.
Yeah. And When Kingdoms Fall, the first demo, EP, whatever thing came out, I think 3 months later, we were already recording something. You
know?
Because we were really, at that point, just gonna prove we're gonna do, like, we're actually gonna do it, we're gonna tour, we're gonna, you know, so
that's
how the band. And you know, Andrew and Athon and I had known each other for a long time before then, you know, but that was pretty much the story of how it went. They said they wanted to snatch me up before somebody else did, you know.
Right.
So, yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, like growing up, and you grew up in Savannah as well?
I'm the only one that is officially from Savannah.
Okay.
Like, I mean, Andrew moved there when he was eight.
Right.
You know, and Athon too.
Right.
Athon was from Savannah as well.
Okay.
But in the band now, I am the only one that is officially from there.
Okay. Yeah. I was telling you, man, earlier, I dig your town, man. I got accustomed to drinking in public and walking around the streets drinking and around oak trees and shit. So being from, you know, having the New Orleans vibe.
It messes me up on tour, man, because I try to walk out with a drink and then snatch you up. And I'm like, from where I'm from, this isn't that big of a deal.
It's not. Yeah. It's not. Yeah. And it's hard to tell people that. But I guess I've literally whipped my license out before when I still had a New Orleans license just to be like, dude, I'm just accustomed to walking out of bars with drinks in my hands, man.
You know, like, you don't heard how we do it? So, yeah. And I mean, being at work bartending, I've tried to give people to go like drinks before. And they're like, is this a joke? You're trying to get me arrested? You know,
right.
It's like, okay, well, don't take it then. Do whatever you want.
Do whatever you want.
Yeah, man.
Nice.
That's what the plastic cups are for.
Exactly.
You do whatever you want with them.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, man, growing up, I guess, when did you first start getting into like heavier music and in particular drumming? Was it all around the same time, or what did you grow up listening to?
I was like one of those kids that was fortunate enough to have like a, like my babysitter had a metalhead boyfriend, you know what I mean? So by like, no shit, first, second grade, I was, you know, listening to Guns N' Roses, Motley Crue, Metallica, you know, like, so really young. And I was, as far as drumming, I played buckets in my front yard.
Yeah.
Till my mom finally got me a drum set. It was just a little tiny little Adam drum set. You know, I destroyed it within like a week.
Right.
You know? And then I got a couple of used sets and then finally got my, you know, first real drum set. But, you know, basically with you know, with my mom, she was, I had to prove that, you know, I'm not just buying you a drum set and you get over it in a week.
Yeah, because you're like, going to be the one making all the fucking noise in the house
exactly. as well. And when I got older, I was like, man, I don't know how you put up with that shit.
Me neither.
Like, me learning how to play drums, it's the worst thing ever. Any other instrument, you can just turn it down.
Right.
You know, and people think like, oh, if I hit them harder, I'm better.
Right.
So I'm sure I was fucking horrible at first, and she had to just put up
with
it. Yeah.
It is amazing. I think the same thing, and it's a common occurrence and common theme in talking to drummers, because inevitably, because you have the biggest instrument and the hardest to transport, not only do you end up having the drum set generally in the house, but then all of your friends are coming over to jam there
as well. Oh, yeah, they all want to. Yeah,
so then not only did they have to hear you sucking on the drums, then they had to hear your shitty bands as well.
Man, that scene in Step Brothers where he's like, don't touch my drum. Man, I know where you're coming from. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, my friends would all come over, and I'd just be like, don't touch. Okay, don't hit them that hard. You know, like, cymbals cost a lot. You know? Like,
I know.
This is before endorsements and all. You know, you're just like a kid, like, trying to just have this nice drum set that you see, you know, because MTV was around when I was a kid.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, right, exactly. That's how when it actually played music videos as well.
Exactly. You know, like, yeah, it was music videos, music TV, and we lived it.
Right.
You know,
Headbangers Ball.
Oh, my God, yes, man.
I never had...
Bible back then.
It really was, because that's if the bands weren't coming through necessarily, like that was kind of your portal into figuring out and hearing those bands, you know? So, and I would wait, I would get to like, get friends to VHS tape it and whatever. So I'd go over to their house, cause I didn't have cable. So then I'd be like, all right, tape it. Then we could watch it. And then I could get there and just watch all these videos.
Saturday night and midnight. That's what I was doing when I was a kid.
That's all.
12 to 2 was important in my life, you know?
Yeah. What was, is there any particular, album you look back on that you still feel influences you still to this day?
Man, the first cassette that I would say, like, I remember the same, like, my babysitter, she I remember she let me borrow Appetite for Destruction, and I just listened to it over and over and over, and then
that record still fucking rules.
Yeah, it still rules, man. I still listen to it to this day.
It's incredible.
And I remember she came over and I was like, you want your tape back, don't you? And she's just like, you can have it. And I was like, yes,
winning.
Yeah, dude.
That's
like,
awesome.
You know, as a kid, I didn't have no money. I couldn't buy, you know, it's like, so that album's just like, does it for me.
Yeah.
You know,
still to this day.
Still to this
day. Fucking incredible.
You put on Appetite for Destruction, I'm down.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah. It's incredible. I actually went and saw them recently in the last like couple of years or whatever. I know they did like this giant world tour, and it was awesome, dude.
Yep.
It was badass.
And Steven Adler's still the best drummer for them.
he definitely had a thing. I mean, that was that band, you know.
Yeah, man. I mean, I wasn't in the band with them, so I don't, you know, that's their problem. But as far as being a fan, it's like, you just, Steven Adler was killing it.
Yeah.
Man.
Now, another, we were talking about crazy autobiographies. Al Jourgensen's from Ministry is crazy, but Steven Adler's is as well.
Yeah.
That guy, I mean, went into like a coke-induced stroke and was super fucked up for
coke,
a real
vodka,
long time.
I mean, man, I can imagine you got kicked out of the biggest band in the world at the time, you know.
Might affect your...
I mean, dude, Axl Rose was the reason why Adam Curry didn't do Headbangers Ball anymore.
Yeah.
Because Ricky Rotman was at the Cat House, and he was friends with Axl, and Axl said, this guy wants to do it. So, and then, okay. Like, that's how MTV did it. It was like, Axl W. Rose told me that this guy wants to do it, so bye, Adam Curry.
You Amazing. Know? Jesus Christ, dude. Well, we talked a little bit about working and this and that and the other. You had mentioned that because you've been doing bartending for quite some time, you have a crazy sleep schedule, but with recording this most recent record, you were tracking drums at, like, starting at 10 p.m.?
Yeah, man.
Like, your shift. You were, like, going in for a shift.
Yeah, man. It was the best, man. I'm, like, seriously, like, a vampire. If you let me be on that schedule, I don't see sun too much.
Really?
If you see me in the morning, then it's not because I'm up, like, having coffee. It's because I'm still up, dude.
Right.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. And you felt like you were – do you feel like your performance benefited from being able to kind of work within your kind of time zone that you operate in?
Yeah. I mean, because when you want to come in and play, you know, I it's not like I've ever just, like – given, think, a sloppy performance on a record,
no,
you know what I mean? But when you want to and you are like, I'm up, I'm aware, this is what I'm going to do when I go in and everything, you know, like, I can hear the difference between the drumming on this new album and other albums. You know what I mean? Like, it's way more upbeat. And I just remember the feel of it. So to me, it makes me feel like the drumming was better.
Right.
You know?
Right. I could see that.
Yeah.
Now, with doing vocals and playing drums in like bands prior to doing Black Tusk, had you done vocals in that band, or did you start when you started doing Black Tusk?
Never.
Okay.
And,
all right.
It's weird. Like, it's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, but now I can't imagine not doing it.
Yeah.
You know, it's automatic. It's nothing. But I remember first doing it and being like, I can't sing here, guys, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it's like, it's definitely something to get used to, and I had never done it before. They just, Andrew and Athon had heard me just, like, singing or screaming or whatever,
yeah.
And they were like, man, I like your voice. Like, can you try to play and do it? You
know? Right.
So,
it usually takes some coaxing. If you had to do it on your own accord, half the time it seems like it wouldn't happen.
But yeah.
With them saying, yeah, come on, get up in it. There you go.
Yeah.
Boom, it happened.
Yep.
Well, you mentioned Athon as well. Obviously, for those who don't know it, tragic passing of him, original member. It was a motorcycle accident?
Motorcycle accident. We actually, our merch girl, Emily, was in the accident with him.
Oh, man.
And we still carry her with us to this day.
You
know what I mean? Like, she rolls with us, you know. After she got out of the hospital, you know, she was really messed up from the wreck, you know. Broke her pelvis and ribs and everything.
Oh, Jesus.
We were visiting her in the hospital too, you know, crazy shit going on.
Yeah.
And when she got better and everything, you know, she was in a slump as well. And, you know, we're like, you want to start traveling with us?
Right.
So, yeah, we still take her with us almost 4 years later.
Yeah. I'm sure, assuming, you know, following that instance, that there was clearly some uncertainty with the band and whatnot. But what was the process of then finding your new bass player? Or I shouldn't say new, he's been in the band for quite some time, he's kind of the new guy, I guess.
Corey is, you know, I knew him from Kyalesa, you know,
okay.
And he was doing this other band called Niche that is nothing like Kyalesa or Black Tusk. You know, he's one of those people that can play anything, too.
Right.
He was doing that band, but, you know, they weren't really touring too much or anything, and it was kind of like, all right, we had a tour with Black Label Society that was within the next 2 months, and it was, you know, I don't know if it was a good, and we had two tours that were set up before the accident with Athon, and they were big tours too.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it might have been better that those tours were already set up, because it
gave
forced
you the incentive,
us to
yeah.
be like, we got to make a decision, and we got to make it pretty quick.
For
you
sure.
know what I mean? So we talked to them. It seemed like a respectable, someone that would respect Athon's old position, you know, came in, did them, played the songs like Athon did with his own little thing, you know,
uh-huh.
and it just worked, you know, and he was a Savannah person too.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like messing, you know, to me with an alien or something.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He knows how we roll. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice. And then obviously, I think we talked about it before we actually hit the record button, but the new guitarist as well, guy that y'all worked with, and because of what y'all did sort of in the studio and how y'all layered the guitars on this record, which was the three of you in the studio, you then thought maybe we can bring in an additional guitarist to get the bigger sound and kind of get closer to how maybe some of those sounds were on the record?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and it's just like a fuller sound on stage.
Yeah.
And like, man, when you're on big stages, three people don't fill it up.
Right.
You know, like, it looks
y'all
better.
Y'all just need to get fat, dude.
Yeah, you know, and I try. You know, like, I want to be fat. It looks good across the stage. It makes me feel really comfortable having Andrew move to the middle and having cool. And it's like my bros are everywhere. You know what I mean? You know,
flanked by bros.
Yeah, it's like I love, like, right when we did the first show, that I was like, I don't want to go back to the old way.
So. Well, with all the touring that you've done, do you have any particular rituals? I like asking people that because I've found that it was just hard to feel even remotely healthy whenever I was doing any kind of touring, just because it's kind of, as I described it, the going from drunk to hungover cycle for me. And just trying to work that into a daily regimen, and like, God damn it.
It's... You get used to it. Yeah. You know,
so maybe you didn't figure out anything in particular. You just figured you've been able to roll with it.
I mean, man, I take vitamins, try to eat as well as I'm going to eat. You know what I mean? You know, We're not angels by any means. You know, we like to have fun, to say the least. I don't know how much I can talk about that, but you know, like, I mean, it comes with it, you know, like, if I ever feel any sort of judgment from another band member for being hungover or, you know, whatever I'm feeling that day, I go, hey, I forgot we're not in a rock and roll band. You
right,
know?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like, of course, man. Like, what do you expect?
Right.
You know? Well, I'm living the life for the people that want to live it.
Exactly. You know? I'm into it. Well, of the gigs that you've played with Black Tusk, are there any particular ones that you feel were especially strange or were just like equipment meltdowns? Because I've got a fucked up story for you.
Equipment meltdowns, absolutely. Like, Athon loved his Mesa Boogie.
Yeah.
You know, even he, you know, that was his thing and all that. But I mean, and they sound great, but I'd be damned if that thing didn't give him like so much problems. Like, you know, other than, you know, just like partying too much or anything. I in Johnson City, Tennessee, one time, I completely blacked out before a show.
Are you serious?
Yeah, complete. Supposedly, supposedly, I played the songs a lot slower than they were supposed to be played. And every time we would get done with a song, I'd go, how are y'all doing out there? Like.
Hey!
I had to, like, between every song.
Every song was the first song.
Yeah, it's like, how y'all doing? So, yeah.
Wow.
I did not feel good the next day. And, yeah. I played definitely drinking before.
Right.
But I had never not remembered a show. And that's the only one that I can, yeah.
That's fucking crazy.
To this day, do not remember ever playing that show. And if somebody was there listening to this, I'm sorry.
Holy shit, man. Yeah. Well, I've got one, and we, all the members of my band, we all do remember it, and it just happened like 2 weeks ago. We played up at this club that we're not always the biggest fans of to begin with, and it's had electrical problems previously. Yeah. We set up, got everything set up, guitar amp won't turn on. Bass, they would power up. Couldn't get any sounds out of them.
Man.
We didn't play a single note, dude. We broke our shit down and left.
That's the
We didn't even play.
It's the worst, man. And I mean,
what?
It's the most frustrating thing ever. It's highly embarrassing.
Yeah.
No matter at any level you're at. Even, I think if the bigger you get, the worse it is.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, everyone starts freaking out. And then, you know, even if you do get it fixed, you're playing the whole time just going, please don't break. Please don't. You know,
then it's
I mean?
In your head, and then it's fucking with you.
You're fucked up. The whole rest of the set, you're fucked up. You know, yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So that was a first for me.
Like sticking to the old drums, no electricity. I can see exactly what problem's going on.
Exactly. Yeah, like, exactly.
I hit it too hard. That's the problem.
That's the problem. I hear you, man. Yeah. So, yeah, that was definitely a first to set up and not play a single note. And then we have to repair some of our amps because of that. I was like, wow. Talk about eating shit.
I didn't play, so I didn't get paid.
Right.
Now I got to, I understand.
Holy moly, man. Well, what else is going on in 2018 other than obviously wrapping up this tour? Y'all have got the one we talked about that y'all going to be doing. Beyond that, I mean, shit, does that take you pretty much out through 2018?
2018, that'll pretty much be the end. Maybe a few fly-in festivals, and then Europe.
Okay.
In the spring of next year.
Nice.
Yeah. Because, you know, you got to do the East Coast touring, then the full U.S. Metal Alliance to cover that, and then you got to do the European, you know.
Yeah.
So.
When of the places that you've been in Europe, are there any ones in particular that you really enjoy playing or that you feel you're especially well received?
I love playing Germany.
That's what everybody says.
I love playing Germany, man. And Berlin is an awesome place. That's a catch 22 because it's so awesome, we have a lot of fun there.
Self sabotage.
Yeah. So we usually wait to after the set, but yeah, we always throw down in Berlin.
I hear you.
So yeah,
that's awesome, man.
Yep.
Very cool. Well, shit, man. I'm looking forward to seeing y'all tonight. Psyched about y'all running around with whores. The band, that is.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Y'all just running around with some whores on this tour.
Yeah, it said that last night in the green room. It said whores. The band, you know,
right, exactly. Yeah. Good clarification.
Yeah,
cool, man. Well, thanks for talking to me, man, and look forward to catching up with y'all tonight and rocking.
Absolutely, man. Thank you.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks, James, for hanging and talking some shit. Be sure to check out Black Tusk. Check out that new record, Taking Care of Black Tusk. Links and descriptions and all that info will be in the description of this podcast. Be sure to be on the lookout for them for the rest of this tour with Whores and White Nails, as well as on the Metal Alliance tour picking up in November. We'll catch you all in the next one, which will actually not be next Monday, because that is a holiday, and I'm going to be down in New Orleans, actually. It's a recurring theme with this. So we'll catch you on the following Monday, not Labor Day. All right, y'all. Crush, bang, boom.